and Company, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, streaming live on Twitter, Twitch, YouTube, and Facebook Live. We are live from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, and we are presented by the Southern Bank of Tennessee, live today from First Horizon Park, where the Nashville Sounds 635 taking on Norfolk. The tarp is on the field. This field drains incredibly well, so I'm thinking they're going to be able to play today. In fact, Norfolk is out there warming up ahead of batting practice right now. So that's exciting. Joined now by Chad Withrow from Outkick, presented by the Southern Bank of Tennessee. Chad, I want you to solve a debate between David Reed and I. What percent chance do you give Brian Callahan of keeping his job beyond this upcoming season for the Titans?
What percent chance do I give Brian Callahan of keeping the job? I think it's 50-50, because I think his fate rests solely with how good Cam Ward's going to be this upcoming season. If he shows signs that he looks like a legit number one pick in the draft and the offense has improved, I think that Amy Adams-Trunk will keep him around. And if he doesn't, I think he's going to be gone. But I think it's really tied completely to the offense and improvement with the offense. And I do think the offense will be improved with Cam Ward under center and not Will Levis. So I think it's 50-50 at best. Now, who agrees with me between you and Reed? Because I may be surprised by this answer.
I would say neither of us agree with you.
Okay.
Reed thinks it's 70%. Reed thinks 70% he's back. I think 35.
So I split the difference in between.
So here's my theory on this, because I'm glad you brought up, you know, hey, it's going to be about how Cam Ward looks. If Cam Ward looks good, then, you know, Jaden Daniels last year threw for 3,500 yards, 29 touchdowns, and 9 picks. Caleb Williams threw for 3,500 yards, 20 touchdowns, and 6 picks. Again, Jaden was better. He had more touchdowns, and he also added some rushing touchdowns in there. But the difference was Jaden Daniels throwing for 210 yards a game, Caleb throwing for 208. The real difference was Jaden's team won and Caleb's team didn't win. And I just think the Titans are going to lose a bunch of games, even if Cam Ward's good. I think the defense sucks. The offensive line's a question mark. The receivers are not very good. The tight ends are atrocious. The running game, eh. So I think it's going to be very hard for Callahan to keep his job, because I think he's going to have to win in order for people to feel like Cam Ward is progressing, Chad.
Yeah, and I think, you know, last year with the Titans, like, not only were they the worst team in the league, but they got blown out a number of times. They weren't even competitive in games, which makes it that much worse. So the question then comes down to Amy Adams-Trunk and her level of patience, which we know that she's not patient. We see that Mike Borgonzi and Chad Brinker are all saying the right things about, oh, we've given her the plan, and she understands the plan, and she's good with the plan, and the plan is going to take some time to build the roster back up and do this and that. But it's kind of like Tennessee Vols fans, you know, feeling really good about things right now and how the whole Nico Iamaleava situation played out. But then if they lose to Vandy next November, they're not going to care. And they're going to be ready for heads to roll at that point. I feel the same way about Amy Adams-Trunk. She could love the plan right now and say, yeah, it's going to take time. It's going to be another bad season. It's going to be another high draft pick. But if we got the right quarterback, it's going to be okay. And then the Titans, you know, have 3 wins in December again next year, and suddenly it's not good enough, and she's going to fire the coach. So I really think it comes down to how much do we buy into Amy Adams-Trunk buying into Mike Borgonzi's plan with Brian Callahan and with Cam Ward. And again, I think it comes back to 50-50. I don't think the Titans are going to be as bad as they were this past year. They're going to improve on that win total this upcoming year. I feel good about that happening. But then how much does he need to win in order to keep his job? I don't know, because I don't know how much she's truly going to be patient with this thing, because we've seen before she gets really impatient really quick.
Yeah. I do wonder when it comes to, because I was talking about this earlier, you know, she fired Robinson and he was winning when she decided to do it. She fired Vrabel. She chose Rand Carthon over Vrabel. She fired Rand Carthon and promoted his lieutenant ahead of him. I do wonder, though, how much does Brian Callahan being a nice guy, as opposed to Vrabel, And like Robinson, I like Robinson. I don't know how Robinson feels about me. I think at times he probably likes me. I think at other times he probably doesn't. I have no idea. I like him, but Robinson can kind of be a tchotchke a-hole too. How much does Brian Callahan being a nice guy, in your opinion, help him out?
I think it helps him with the media mostly, that they're going to cut him some slack because he's a nice guy, but I don't think it helps him with the owner that much. I think if he sees that things aren't improving, then he's going to be fired. Now, again, I think they're going to improve enough to where he keeps his job for at least another year, but I do think that it helps with the media, it helps with the fans. The Mike Vrabel thing's an interesting one because Mike Vrabel was a complete jerk to everybody in the media, was always sort of the smartest guy in the room. And I said all along, that's great when you're winning, when you're the NFL Coach of the Year, when you're going to the AFC Championship game. But when it turns south, fans aren't going to put up with it as much. Your owner might not put up with it as much. But it really came down to losing for Mike Vrabel. I think it's going to come down to losing for Brian Callahan, too. I don't think him being a nice guy is going to save his job with the owner. But I do think that it does help with the media and with fans. And look, the media is the conduit to the fans. So if the media likes you and they're not going to be as hard on you because you're a nice guy, which I'm not saying you're doing that, Jared, but I think a lot of people probably would, then I think that ultimately helps you with some of the fans that may be quicker to turn on you. But I don't think it's going to help with Amy Adams Strong.
Chad Withrow is our guest. What do you make of this? Across the country, people this week have just been roasting and barbecuing Abdul Carter for the gall that he had to call up LT and ask him for his number, call up Phil Simms, ask him for his number. They're saying, how dare you even ask Lawrence Taylor? But nobody said anything here when it came to Cam Ward and Warren Moon. And I was the guy being the bad guy for saying, I don't like it.
Well, I think a couple things. All right. All due respect to Warren Moon, who is a great player and a Pro Football Hall of Famer. He ain't Lawrence Taylor. Okay. Lawrence Taylor is arguably the best defensive player in the history of the NFL and revolutionized the game. Warren Moon did not do that. So we're talking about two different leagues of players, even though both are Pro Football Hall of Famers. So I think that's part of the response that you're getting there. I agree with you that I think it's getting ridiculous with this. And here's the problem that I have with it. I think it's the player, the rookie, putting a target on their own back.
Yeah.
I think when you do that and you have the audacity to go to the Hall of Fame player or the jersey's retired and ask for it, A, you're sort of putting them in a difficult spot, which I love how Lawrence Taylor handled it. And Warren Moon's a very nice guy, and I understand him giving that to him. But, we talk about if Cam Ward ends up being Jake Locker, how foolish that photo opportunity looks and how dumb that video looks 5 years from now, if that's the case. And also, Cam Ward, with all the pressure you already have going into the NFL, you're the number one overall pick. You were seen as the savior to a market to get the NFL team good again. You already have a ton of pressure on you. I don't know why you want to have that added layer of, and I want to unretire a uniform and a jersey number to wear that uniform before I even take a snap in the NFL. I just don't think it's good for anybody involved. I don't think it's good for the player that takes the jersey. I don't think it makes the Hall of Famer look good or the player with the jersey retired. I think in the end, Lawrence Taylor's the one who looks really smart in all of this.
So funny that you brought up the putting the pressure thing because people are like, Cam is a dog. That won't bother him. I'm like, I don't know. Then you got D. Mace this week yelling and screaming about how the Titans need to be more selective. They don't need to retire his number, Keith Bullock's number, Blaine Bishop's number, Frank Wycheck's number, but they need to be more, D. Mace said, more selective with who they give it to. I'm like, dude, either your number's retired or it's not retired. For me, Steve McNair, Eddie George, Derrick Henry are the only three players that were primarily Titans who should have their numbers retired, and everything else should be in circulation. I think it's ridiculous.
Yeah, and look, you're a Pro Football Hall of Famer, you get your number retired. I mean, there does need to be a higher standard for it. I think they probably do retire too many numbers. And that's a byproduct of this being a young NFL market. I mean, as Titans fans and people that go way back with this team from the beginning, we revere those legendary figures early on when they moved to Adelphia Coliseum at the time and won immediately, it was a huge deal. And they became legends. So I think we probably in terms of the league, we as Nashvillians overly revere those early Titans more than markets that have had pro football for longer would, because they have more of a history with it. So I think that's natural. You can't go back and reverse history with that. But I would agree with D-Mace moving forward. There needs to be a higher standard for jersey numbers retired. And those numbers that are retired, the players who got them retired should have a higher standard for giving that number up. And I don't think you do that to someone who's not taking a snap in the league yet. It was a nice moment. It was a good job by the Titans to pull off that moment. I just think if Cam Ward isn't great, I'm going to be on the show with you 3, 4, 5 years from now, Jared, and we're going to be making fun of that moment. And that's unfortunate.
I have a hot take that I want to get to on the other side with you before we hit the hot seat, but we'll do that next. Chad Withrow with us on the program here on Stillman & Company, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Stillman & Company, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. And we are joined, as we usually are on Fridays. Today's Thursday. We'll have Vandy UT by Chad Withrow from Outkick, presented by the Southern Bank of Tennessee. Chad, I want to start with this take I had this week. I did the math. When it came to the reported offer that PK said the Giants made the Titans 2 1s and 2 2s in order to get up to go get Cam Ward, and the Titans decided at the combine that Cam was their guy, and they rebuffed all the trade offers because they love Cam so much they must think he's Joe Burrow. I ask you this question, which is, after doing the math about the money, if the Titans were to go get Sam Darnold or Geno Smith, you know, a $40 million quarterback, I think Sam's 37.5, and I think Geno's a little bit more than that. If they were to get that guy, plus take the deal with the Giants, with all those extra picks, the difference in money that they would have to pay over the next 2 years, as opposed to just drafting Cam Ward and having only their own picks, is roughly $100 million in cash. I think there's a chance that Amy Adams Strunk gave them a budget and they figured, you know what? We can't get the quarterback and make the trade and fit it within the budget. I don't think $100 million is something an owner doesn't have a say in and doesn't care about. And I think that's why the Titans didn't make the trade and drafted Cam Ward. What do you think of that take?
I think it's reasonable to think that a budget of some sort had some factor in them not taking that deal. But what I don't understand about refusing the trade is, remember Mike Borgonzi, one of those early addresses, talked about whatever that number of 12 or whatever first three round picks over two or 3 years. Remember, he had a set number of players that he wanted that you said you could really revamp a roster with this many players in the top however many picks. And that would have given them that immediately with that trade, right? When you look at this year and next, they would have had that immediately had they accepted that trade. Now, if money was, you know, the biggest factor, and so you could still do that trade and just let Will Levis play again this year for nothing and go pick number one again next year. And then depending on what that number one pick turns into with the Giants, you could have two top five picks, you know, a year from now and really go on the cheap. So, look, I get what you're saying, but the option could have also been take the trade, don't draft a quarterback this year, maybe draft a quarterback next year and go dirt cheap this year and just start Brandon Allen and lose almost every game that you play. So it's hard to get a sense of exactly what this franchise wants to be right now. And I don't think we're going to fully know until we see the quarterback play. And now that we know they turned down that trade, that tells us a lot either about what Mike Borgonzi and his team think about Cam Ward, and that is that he's Patrick Mahomes, essentially, because they turned down that trade, or that there is something going on with the budget where they didn't want to spend the money on a veteran player and instead wanted to go cheaper and draft that quarterback number one and have him start for you.
They are, by the way, 30th in cash spending this season, according to SpotTrack. And they're paying more to their quarterback because Cam's getting a $32 million signing bonus. So they're paying more to their quarterback than, say, Houston, Washington, you know, teams that have quarterbacks on rookie deals that haven't signed new deals and haven't gotten signing bonuses this year. They're 30th in the league in payroll. And that does, in my opinion, doesn't get talked about enough. Okay, hot seat time.
Well,
Number
one
one.
quick thing, and I'll just
Oh.
pose this question to you and your audience to think about. How many ownership situations in the NFL are worse than the Titans right now? Just think about that. This could be a discussion on your show at some point. Like, tell me who has it worse from an ownership standpoint. One that doesn't live in the market, one that is quick to react to things, one that we're actually legitimately asking questions about whether or not they're going to spend money. Like, how many actually have it worse than that right now? Now that Daniel Snyder's gone and they have good ownership with the Commanders, I can't think of many that are worse right now than the Titans.
Dallas.
Okay, but at least he'll spend money.
No, he does not. He is cheap.
Well,
he
okay.
is sneaky.
Agree
with
to disagree,
that.
But yeah, he's been bad. I mean, Jimmy Haslam, you
Jets.
know, he'll spend money, but he's made some disastrous decisions. Point being, she's bottom five in the league.
Oh, for sure.
However you want to play.
Okay, hot seat. Number one, Vanderbilt and Tennessee baseball this weekend. What do you make of the rivalry? And does Vanderbilt need to take 2 out of 3 in order to punch back in the recent history of this rivalry?
Yeah, it's a great opportunity for Vandy because Tennessee's really struggling right now. So, you know, we talked about it a year ago, and it was amazing how Tony Vitello had completely shifted things in favor of Tennessee. Then they go on to win the national title, and it feels like things are shifting even more. And it just felt like it after the start of the season, Tennessee's ranked number one for a while, that, man, he's just going to keep it rolling. And whatever mojo those Tony Vitello teams have, especially offensively, this team has not had in the last month. So I think it's a great opportunity for Vanderbilt. Tim Corbin's got a really good team. They've bounced back nicely. It's a big-time series. This is a big-time rivalry. That was Tony Vitello's charge when he took the job. Get on par with Vanderbilt baseball. Make it a rivalry again. He's done that and then some. I think it's a good opportunity for Tim Corbin to make it more of a rivalry again and take at least 2 out of 3 in this series. But Tennessee has, the past couple of years, I feel like they've kind of turned their fortunes on a Vandy series and done some really good things against them and got them going. So it's a great opportunity for both teams. Neither coach likes the other one, and that makes it even more fun.
Number two, is Tim Corbin an example of an old dog learning new tricks in college baseball?
Well, I think because, you know, when NIL came in, some advantages that Tim Corbin had at Vanderbilt started to go away, and he's had to resettle himself in the new world of college baseball. I don't think anything he was doing was outdated or not smart or any of that. I think that he's sort of learned where Vanderbilt is in the new setting of college baseball, and he's learned how to adapt that way. And it's ultimately going to rely on more, you know, tournament success. But let's make it clear about Tim Corbin, too. The dude doesn't have to do anything else, and he's a legend for what he's done with Vanderbilt baseball. Like, I mean, there's no, you know, anything is icing on the cake right now for Tim Corbin.
I mean, he's the greatest coach in the history of Vanderbilt.
What he's done. Yeah, I mean, he's incredible. So he's a legend regardless, and I think this shows that he's here to stay. And they're not just going to fade off into the darkness. So that's good news for Vanderbilt. And this should be a fun series this weekend. I know Tony Vitello doesn't like him. I know Tim Corbin doesn't like Tony Vitello. And I think that just adds to a really fun rivalry with two really good teams. And Tennessee's got the talent to go on a run in the tournament, too. I'm not going to discount them or say they're done for the season. That's not someone you want to host in a regional if they end up not hosting, or a super regional. So I think it's going to be a lot of fun this weekend.
Number three, George Pickens to the Cowboys. How will this end, and who made the right decision, Dallas or Pittsburgh?
I think they both made the right decision for this reason. Dallas badly needs a number two receiver to pair with CeeDee Lamb. And this is a guy who averages a lot of yards per catch, explosive guy, can really help you and give you a vertical threat for that team. He's also a head case, and he's a diva, and he's a problem. And Mike Tomlin, even though he was able to coach Antonio Brown for as long as he was, doesn't ultimately like problems. So if you can get rid of that player in a contract year, I don't think it's the worst move ever. So it's one of those that I think actually makes a ton of sense for both sides.
Number four, what's wrong with the Boston Celtics, and does their ineptitude through the first two games of that playoff series make you more interested than you would typically be in a second-round NBA playoff series?
I just got done watching the Celtic City documentary on HBO Max, that Bill Simmons put together. I think it's 9 parts throughout the history of the Celtics. It's terrific. Highly recommend everyone go watch that, about the history of the Boston Celtics. It's done by the same people who did The Last Dance, the Bulls documentary. That got me more interested in the Boston Celtics. And now the Knicks coming back from 20-plus points down in 2 games to go up 2-0 in Boston definitely has me really centered in on the series. This is going to be interesting to look at the ratings for the NBA playoffs moving forward, because you got no LeBron James and Luka Doncic, got bounced the first round. You have this high-profile series between 2 gigantic markets with New York and Boston. You still have Steph Curry and the Warriors as a big brand that's left out there. But outside of that, you've got teams like Oklahoma City and Minnesota and Cleveland and Indiana. So I want to see what the interest level looks like in these playoffs moving forward. But that series absolutely has my attention right now. I am loving it. I don't know what's going on with the Celtics, but the Celtics are in trouble. And all you got to do is watch all the crazy New York Knicks fans in the streets of New York going nuts after each win to see how much trouble they're in.
Number 5, would you be in favor of capping NCAA student athlete salaries?
Yes. I'd be in favor of anything that's going to put guardrails up and some sort of regulation to make it. Look, I know that certain teams are always going to have an advantage, so I'm not going to say it's going to be fair for all or equal for all, but at least a system of rules in place where we know what the rules are. And they got to tighten up the transfer portal. There needs to be 2-year contracts with a player. You can't have players going into that portal every year to just make more money somewhere else or at their current school. The players know they have all the leverage. They're utilizing that leverage, and it's throwing the game completely out of whack. I'm all for it. People I know say, oh, I don't like college sports anymore because it's just like the pros. And I come back and say, it's not just like the pros, because the pros have a salary cap. The pros have rules. They have contracts. This has none of that. It's worse than pro sports. If you're so anti-pro sports, then what this is right now in college sports is far worse. So, yes, I would be in favor of that or any rules and regulations that's going to make it where at least everybody knows what the score is in the sport at all times.
Do you think it's possible, though, you know, to actually – legislate it without there being a collective bargaining agreement in which the leagues have to share some of their money?
No, and I think that's where it's going to have to head. They're going to have to be employees of some sort. They're going to have to collectively bargain. You know, you've got Nick Saban on this presidential committee with the big billionaire guy from Texas Tech. You're going to have to add conference commissioners to that committee. You're going to have to have active student athletes, former student athletes. States attorneys generals is going to need to be on that. A governor or two will need to be on that, a TV executive. I mean, think of all the people you're going to have a true committee to figure this thing out. And a lot of it's going to be lawyers that are going to have to come to some agreement on how to turn college athletes into employees and make it where they can collectively bargain something. I think that's where this is headed.
Last one, your thoughts on ESPN saying we will pay more for 9 SEC games.
Well, knowing Greg Sankey, who is a master negotiator and isn't going to bend until he gets what he wants out of a situation, this to me ensures that they're going to 9 games after this season, because that report getting out, that's what he wanted. He wanted ESPN to come back to the bargaining table and to give them more money for that 9th game, and they are, and now the SEC is going to be playing 9 games.
You just think it's a matter of when, not if?
I think it's a matter of this is the last year, right, in the rotation, and then it kind of starts over the following year. I think it's going to be not this year, but 2026. We'll see 9 conference games.
Chad Withrow from Outkick, presented by the Southern Bank of Tennessee. Chad, thank you for being accommodating for us this week. Enjoy the weekend, and we'll talk soon.
All right. Thank you.
Yep. Chad Withrow on our program. So there's one thing that a lot of people around here seem to think is not going to happen. And yet the Titans are telling us it's going to happen. We'll get to that coming up next. What Rich Eisen had to say about it, we'll do that next. Hillman & Company, 102.5 The Game.
But is it really going to be a situation where Will Levis can compete with Cam Ward, or because that door does appear to have been left open slightly ajar when this was said last week. And again, I guess one way that Cam Ward would be talked about is if he's in a quarterback competition with Will Levis and Will Levis is winning it. Like, fair and square, straight up, no thumb on the scale, just because someone was drafted first overall and we're willing to let him marinate, we're willing to let him work his way through getting ready because Will Levis is showing up loaded for bear, you know, putting mayonnaise in his coffee and eating bananas and getting ready to go. You know?
Then why didn't you take Travis Hunter?
You could have had Hunter.
No, no, I'm fully aware of that, and I might be completely misinterpreting what Brian Callahan had to say, but I have since, you know, read tons of articles and do not see, there's no question he's our starter, and he's going to be installed as our starter. And sure, I mean, does this push Will Levis? Yeah. Does this push Will Levis to say essentially Brandon Allen or Tim Boyle have a shot at the backup job?
But Will Levis had his chance.
Yeah.
Why'd you take a quarterback number one overall?
Because Will Levis wasn't the guy, or Cam Ward has such a major upside. Like, if Caleb Williams was the guy being drafted, it would have been, oh, yeah, this makes complete sense. Will Levis, see you later.
That was Rich Eisen earlier today. He's trying to figure out, why is Brian Callahan, now, why is he not just coming out and saying that Cam Ward is the starter? Does this mean Will Levis could be the starting quarterback? And TD was on earlier today, and he says, hey, you know, just because they're saying that he has to win the job doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to be a fair fight between all four guys that they say have a shot to be the starting quarterback of the Titans. I'm just going to say this. I think Cam Ward's going to be the starter. This reminds me of what the Texans did a couple of years ago, where they said it was going to be a competition between Davis Mills and C.J. Stroud and Case Keenum. And C.J. Stroud was the starting quarterback at the beginning of it, and C.J. Stroud got the starting job. That's what I think is going to happen here, and that's what I think, you know, so I think it's probably much to do about nothing. But let me just say this. I want the Titans to take it slow with Will Levis. I mean, excuse me, with Cam. I don't give a rat's ass about Will Levis. Don't give one poop about Will Levis. But I want them to take it slow when it comes to Cam. And the reason being is I believe that there are two choices. You can either go super speed with Cam Ward, where if he's not ready for that speed, and oftentimes in the NFL, we see these young quarterbacks put out there in positions to lead the team before they're ready. If he's not ready for super speed and he sits back on the bench, it'll be okay. Again, a lot of quarterbacks needed to sit. The greatest quarterback who ever lived, Tom Brady, sat the bench. Aaron Rodgers, who's won four MVPs, first ballot Hall of Famer, sat the bench. Patrick Mahomes already has three Super Bowls, two MVPs, sat the bench. Lamar Jackson did not start right away. He's got two league MVPs. Josh Allen, the reigning league MVP, did not start his first game as a rookie. Nathan Peterman started in Buffalo. Steve McNair is the best quarterback the Titans have ever had. He sat the bench. But because, and I think that those Scarbini producers that Rich Eisen had, I think they are, no disrespect, Reed, you're not a Scarbini producer. You're an A-plus producer.
Good, because I don't even know what Scarbini means.
Okay, good. Those Scarbini guys that Rich has on his program, they're like, well, why'd you take him number one then? Because we think in 3 years he's going to be a star. That's why. He doesn't have to be a star tomorrow. He has to be a star eventually. And I don't understand, as much as I can say this, I do not understand why, if Brandon Allen starts at quarterback for the Titans, Titan fans are going to go nuts. Why people around the country are going to think that Cam Ward is a bust if Brandon Allen starts the first game his first year. If Will Levis starts the first game Cam Ward's first year. Again, was Josh Allen a bust because Nathan Peterman started? What did the Houston Oilers get out of Chris Chandler winning something like 13 games over 2 years? Well, they didn't ruin Steve McNair. That's what they got out of it. It's okay to take things slow. You don't have to do what everybody else would do. In fact, Tim Grover, who is Michael Jordan's old trainer, Kobe Bryant's old trainer, Dwayne Wade's old trainer, he's got a book about basically how these guys that are the elite of the elite, the true killers out there, how they've become this way. And one thing he says in his book, which I subscribe to, is if you do everything like everybody else, you'll end up just like everybody else. It's okay to take things slow. Again, if you do things like everybody else, you'll be like everybody else. So why not do what Tom Brady did, what Mahomes did, what Lamar did, what Allen did, what McNair did, what Rodgers did? Why not do that? It's not the end of the world. It's okay if Cam Ward is not a superstar day one. It's okay. But no matter how many times I say that, I just don't think people are going to feel that way. I think they're going to feel like it is a slight to Cam Ward. That is a sign that they shouldn't have picked him if they take it slow. And I think that's stupid. 615-737-1025. Vandy, Tennessee. First pitch tomorrow, 3-game series. Tennessee needs to rebound their season. Vanderbilt needs to punch back in this rivalry. I have a theory about what I think the next step in this rivalry should be. I want to get to that next. Stillman and Company, 1025 The Game.
So what do you make of where both teams stand and this weekend series coming up?
Yeah, you know, I would have never expected going into this that Vanderbilt would be ranked higher than Tennessee. That hasn't been the case all season. Tennessee's been number one for a lot of the season. Whereas I think Vanderbilt's kind of been under the radar a little bit of a younger team that's improving at the right, starting to improve a little bit at the right time. Yeah, Tennessee needs this. This is a big weekend for Tennessee. They go to Arkansas to end the regular season. It's a very good team. So if you don't win this series, I'm not so sure you're going to get the next one. And if you close on a run like that, then you're probably not hosting in the NCAA tournament. So I think it's that pivotal for Tennessee that they have a good weekend. I think they're probably going to have a good weekend only because when these two have played, there have been two consistencies when these two have played the last few years. It's been very chippy, very heated, and I think that'll be the case again. There's several reasons for that. But also Tennessee's just pretty much dominated Vanderbilt up until here very recently. Vanderbilt got one game to close last year's series, then they beat them in the SEC tournament one time. But, you know, it's not easy to go to Knoxville and win. Teams have made it look easy here lately, which has been one of the big surprises of this season. It's really the first time under Vitello that's happened. But I just feel like there's a lot on the line for Tennessee this weekend. We'll see how Vanderbilt responds to it. They can kind of play spoiler. They're a team, like I said, with some young players who are starting to improve, especially offensively. They've been a little more clutch lately, and there's going to be a lot of clutch situations, I think, going out to Tennessee this weekend. But I think this will be a circle the wagons kind of weekend for the Vols.
That was Gentry Estes on with Robbie and Joe this morning talking about the Vandy Tennessee series. And again, I don't, you know, the regular season with college baseball, I don't get super into it. Willie, you know, he loves it and eats it up and everything else. And I'm not saying that, you know, I'm not going to do the whole bit of like, who cares who it, because again, you care what you care about in this case. And Tennessee being good, I think is actually good for people to pay attention and care about Vandy baseball. I think these three games are huge. I think it's big for the rivalry. And I feel like this is really the only sport where it is a true rival, where the teams don't like each other, the fans don't like each other, the coaches don't like each other. This isn't like Vandy in basketball where, yes, they beat Tennessee, but Tennessee's more worried about Kentucky and Florida and everything else. And it's certainly not football. So these three games are in Knoxville. Next year, the three games will obviously be here in Nashville. And I have a hot take. And I don't know if the SEC would even let them do this. But if I were Vanderbilt, I would come down here to First Horizon Park and I would play one of the three games here instead of at Hawkins Field. Again, I don't know the exact attendance for Hawkins Field off the top of my head, Reed, but I'm going to say it's probably somewhere around 4,000 if I had to guess.
I'm going to look it up.
But I'm going to guess somewhere around that. Well, the attendance here is 11,000. And I think that if they played here, they'd sell 11,000 tickets for Vanderbilt versus Tennessee. So here's the deal I would make if I was Vanderbilt. All of our season ticket holders get this game for free, you know, as part of their season ticket package. Every other ticket in the building goes towards the Anchor Impact Fund. That is Vanderbilt's NIL arm. And it goes specifically for Vanderbilt baseball. Now, I don't know how much money those tickets make. I'm not the general manager of the Sounds. I'm not the head of the ticket operation. I'm not somebody who's well-versed in, you know, cost per ticket, plus renting out the building, plus I don't know. But I got to imagine that would bring in some money. So if you're Vanderbilt, you're going to play one of your three games next year here at First Horizon Park. It's going to be packed. There's going to be Vol fans everywhere. You're giving up for one game your home field advantage. But all the money that those Vol fans spend goes right to you and right to you buying better players. So now Vol fans have a conscious choice to make. Are you going to support the Vandy program while supporting your team? And again, you're still playing two games at Hawkins Field. But I think if you did that, again, just my opinion, you'd make a lot of money for your NIL fund, and that would help Vanderbilt get some better players. Not that Vanderbilt doesn't have NIL money. They do. But I would personally enjoy making Tennessee fans pay. That's it for us. We are out of here, Stillman and company. Guys, I'm on my way out of the country. I will see you all when I see you all. Enjoy the weekend, Stillman and company. 102.5, 106.3 The Game.